This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Michael Gordon Shapiro. And hey, it's really, really wonderful to have a chance to talk with you.
It's great to be on the show, and thank you for having me here.
Well, your newest project is the soundtrack for the real-time strategy game Empires Apart. And I'm so glad you got in touch, because this was completely off my radar screen. And yet, it's such a wonderful game. And you've said that you really love RTSs. And so this must have been a really fun soundtrack to write.
It was a real delight for that reason. And being a fan of the genre and someone who spent way too much time playing games like Empire Earth and the Age of Empires, it was fun to be able to just jump into the beta and know how to play it magically because the controls were so familiar.
Yeah, I bet. Well, what is it in particular about RTSs that you really, really love?
They are engaging and absorbing in a way that's very distinct from games that are more narrative, you know, story-based games. And here it's this constant experience of problem-solving that is mixed with the, you know, the visceral experience of watching towns burn and soldiers slaughtering each other. It really gets your blood boiling. It's very absorbing. It's just a genre I've always connected to.
Well, and there's always kind of the random aspect too, because it's different every time, and especially depending on how much AI they give, you know, your little farmers and warriors and stuff. It really is fun to just sort of set it up and watch them go at it.
There is tremendous replayability, and this is almost a little embarrassing. I actually licensed a PC emulator on my Mac just so I could play an obscure RTS game from, I think, 2004. Just because I felt like there was still more gameplay to be done in that game, and I wasn't ready to let it go, even though my PCs were non-functional.
Well, how did you get to be part of the team at Destiny Bit to write the soundtrack?
The lead on the project, Gianpaolo Vernacchi, reached out to me because he was looking for a composer to write the in-game music. He, at that point, had a magnificent main theme that was written by Sean Beeson. And Sean just wasn't available for the rest of the project. So he was scouting around for a composer. And he saw that I had scored a couple of classic, if we want to call it that, RTS games. I'd written music for Empire Earth 2 and 3. And he wanted someone who was connected to the tradition of this game. And as he put it, he wanted someone who wrote music for games that he loved as a kid, which was flattering and made me feel ancient at the same time. And so he thought I was a natural fit, and I loved what he was doing. Empires Apart is very much a, I don't want to call it a tribute, but it's a salute to that genre of game, and unabashedly so. It says that right on the website. So it just felt like home base to me, and I think we got off right off the bat really well.
That's very cool. What were some of the things that you guys talked about in those early meetings, about the kinds of things that he envisioned for the music?
Gianpaolo has a very strong artistic opinion, and it's very gratifying to be a composer working with him because he's a huge fan of thematic and melodic scoring. And this is not as much in vogue today as it would have been 15 years ago. You know, the musical aesthetic today in game music is transparency. And there are good reasons for that as well. But he was very, very caught up with the idea of having hummable themes in the game. He really wanted the music to be something you could listen to on an OST afterwards and enjoy it in its own right. And that's just a wonderful thing to hear if you're a composer, because you're being asked to artistically engage in the project, not just as an accompanist, but as an artist in your own right. So that was a delight to hear.
One of the challenges, I would think, with writing music for an RTS is that as you're planning your village and you're working out your strategy and stuff, there are so many variables with how long that's all going to take. So when you were thinking about the melodies for each of the different empires, how much of a challenge was it to write melodies that potentially could be repeated over and over again while the player was setting everything up?
You're absolutely right in that there is a tension there. And on one hand, if you have an artistic directive to write something that's hummable and melodic, you have to reconcile that with the fact that you don't want the music to ever distract the player. You don't want it to be too noticeable, and you certainly don't want to feel like it's looping forever. So the solution I came up with was to embody a very gradual lyrical voice musically most of the time, where themes were very slow to build, particularly in the phases of the game where the music was going to be going for a potentially very long time. We were a little more forgiving earlier in the game where there were atmospheric cues that you would hear once during gameplay. We felt that we could afford to be a little more overtly melodic there because we wouldn't be hammering those melodies into the ground. And later we shifted to a much more gradual, melodic style.
Wow. Well, there's a great example of that that you mentioned on your website in the blog. It's a combat track, The Crashing Red Tide. And you did exactly that. It starts as pretty low key. And the other thing that I thought was so interesting, because I haven't really heard anybody else talk about this, is when you're engaged in any kind of battle, I think whether it's a boss battle or an RTS, you don't have the bandwidth in your brain to really pay attention closely to the music. So I love how, with that track in particular, when things really get going, you actually simplified the music.
That was very deliberate, and for the exact reason you said. I think towards the end of an RTS experience, you are incredibly scatterbrained. You're jumping from one part of the map to the other. You're typically fighting a battle on multiple fronts. If things aren't going well, you're in this state of lachrymose despair because you're watching your beautiful civilization be torn to the ground. There's a lot going on emotionally, so I tried to paint with very broad strokes as we got closer to the end of the game.
Thank you. it's very effective because, again, you know, you've got a lot of other things to pay attention to. And yet, you know, the music, it has such a psychological impact, especially if you're on the winning side. You can really kind of just sort of get lost in that, too, which is fantastic. One of the things that was so interesting to me about the way this game is built is with the six different empires, French and Chinese and Aztec and Arab and Byzantine and Mongols, and you've managed to create kind of core samples of really iconic music from all of those different cultures. And I mean, I'd love to go just sort of empire by empire and talk about what you found was really iconic for each. But as you were working it out, I mean, did you know right off the bat that you were going to be putting together music for each of these different cultures?
That was very much part of the plan. And in fact, one of the differentiating features of Empires Apart from other games in the genre is how much specificity there is to the experience of picking a particular faction or culture. It's not just a simple matter of having the units look slightly different, but there are substantial differences between the different civilizations. And so the musical extension of this is that we wanted the musical experience of playing a particular culture to feel very distinct. And the idea of drawing from folk music of the various cultures that you could play was really in the game plan from the beginning.
It's such an interesting idea, and it must have been fun to sort of go on a world tour with your music, too.
That's a very good way of putting it, and it really was fun to get to write in all these different musical colors and to rethink the approach for each player experience.
So with each one of them, did you do a lot of listening to their especially iconic music, or did you kind of deconstruct them all to kind of figure out why it sounded so unique and why it was like so identifiably Chinese, let's say?
There was definitely a lot of research before I started writing, to the extent that research is possible. In some cases, the folk music doesn't really have a written tradition, and there's definitely not a recorded tradition. So when, for example, you're thinking about Aztec music, there are a couple of, I think, surviving rhythmic motives that you can research, and you can learn about the kind of instruments that were used, but there's no firsthand sources. So a certain amount of imagination and westernization of the musical traditions is necessary. When it came to what's called the Asian civilization, it's really a proxy for the Chinese, but we speak more generally in the game. I'd been in a similar artistic space recently because I've just finished writing my second orchestral concerto for guzheng, which is a Chinese zither. And on those projects, I had done a lot of blending of Western and Chinese folk traditions. So that particular approach was very familiar to me, and I felt like I was prepared for that. In the cases of some of the other cultures, the Byzantines in particular, I really had to sit down and think, what does this mean musically? We don't have any recordings or examples. What about this particular culture separates it from the others, and what can we use as a hook or an entry point for giving them a kind of musical identity?
And with the Byzantine one especially, the spires of Constantinople, you mentioned that what you really wanted to do was to have a fusion of Middle Eastern and Western sounding music, like a crossroads, just like the culture would have been at the time, which I think is just so interesting.
That was our approach for that particular culture, and it was important to differentiate them from the Arabic culture, which was also in the game. We wanted to feel like they were distinct from one another, despite having a kind of overlap in their musical traditions. So whereas the Arabic music is more drawn from folk music, there's more percussion, there's duduk, there's a lot of solo winds, the Byzantine theme is a little more grandiose and nostalgic and orchestral. It's I tried to tap into a little bit of the spirit of Miklos Rozsa or the other composers of the 1960s biblical epics or Mideastern epics, just to try to find a voice that blended some of the folk music traditions with the Western orchestral tradition.
It's so cool to know that, because that's exactly the feeling that I got from it, was watching one of those films from the 60s where we're off in an exotic location. And yeah, there's those swooping strings and then the scales. And it just, it has a sense of scale, of vast landscapes, that it's just really cool. So it's very cool that you were able to, you know, tap into music by, from what I understand, one of your film composing heroes.
Absolutely. And there's nothing quite as fun for a composer as being tasked with the emulation of a style of music that you love or a genre from a composer that you love. And this was definitely a case of that.
Yeah. The Aztec track, the Warriors of Tenochtitlan, is just fascinating, because I mean, we touched on a little bit of the instruments that you chose, and again, that's one of those cultures where there's really nothing there that would be authentic, but the instruments that you chose were just so interesting. There's almost like a Peruvian flute. It's a very breath heavy sound. And what were some of the other instruments that you incorporated in that track?
There's a lot of hand percussion. There's a lot of solo woodwinds that are non-Western, as you say. This was really my educated guess as to what the music of that time might have sounded like given the materials available to construct instruments. I did a terrible cheat and I included the didgeridoo, which is totally not South American or Mesoamerican, but felt right emotionally, and it felt kind of cut from the same cloth. And I think it worked out pretty well. It's worth noting that throughout all of these cultural-specific themes, the orchestra always comes into play as a kind of lingua franca. There's always a common core of making it feel cinematic and not literally like folk music, but folk music inspired. So you can still hear the orchestra in a more subtle way during the Mesoamerican music as well.
Yeah. Did you ever get to a point with any of the tracks where you realized it was turning into some sort of ethnomusicology kind of exercise, and you had just like gone over the top and you had to like dial it back so it just sounded like fun game music?
Actually, the danger is in the other direction, because speaking as an outsider to all these traditions, I have to be careful not to caricature them or do something that might be perceived as insulting. So left to my own druthers, I'm going to sound like a Western composer. So where I had to self-correct was in the direction of authenticity rather than pulling back from authenticity.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Did you consult with any, I guess since it came up, any ethnomusicologists to see if it was accurate or you were on the right track?
I consulted with the internet quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
It's my favorite authority figure. I did some research more for the cultures with which I was less familiar. So I ended up doing more research on the Mesoamerican music, whereas I felt like I had a pretty good grasp of Chinese folk music at that point. I don't think I actually consulted any specific human beings. I think the necessities, the deadline required a little bit of a fast and loose approach to research.
Well, let's talk about the deadline. How long did you have to create this soundtrack?
I'm trying to remember, actually. You know, once you leave a project, you tend to sweep all memories of the logistics of the process behind. I think it's a couple of months that were interrupted by a trip that I had scheduled. So I want to say 2 or 3 months with interruptions.
Wow, that's phenomenal. I mean, finding the right voice for it, I'm sure makes it a little bit easier, but still, creating something like this on such a tight deadline, it's got to be a real challenge.
Well, deadlines are both a curse and a blessing. We always hate them when they're imposed on us, but they often prompt us to do our best work because they just light that fire in our rear and make us rise to the challenge and not get too lazy. So I think there's a sweet spot of deadlines where on one extreme, you're on a TV type schedule and you're just desperate to finish the music in some way that works. And with game music in particular, there is a danger of the deadlines actually being too generous, which can rob you of some momentum. So I felt we really hit the sweet spot here. I was slightly panicked, but never too panicked.
Well, one of the things that really struck me about listening to this score is it sounds like you had a really, really big budget with all of the lush orchestration and all the different other things that are going on. Is that really the case? Or did you actually come up with some ideas to just make the most of the budget that you did have?
I'm very flattered that you said that, as it was an entirely digital score, except in the sense that digital instruments are ultimately recordings of human beings. But we didn't have any live recording on this, so I would not call the budget humongous. When I'm writing for an emulated orchestra, I treat it very seriously, and I will often do an orchestration pass on paper with pencil, old school, just so I tap into that part of my brain that really thinks of how an orchestra should sound and what kind of colors make sense. So I'd like to think that it makes my digital orchestrations a little less fake than they might be if I just sat there and improvised into a keyboard, which is sometimes necessitated by deadlines. So I'm very flattered that you said that, and that was certainly what we were going for.
Well, you must have had an absolutely incredible orchestra library to use, because like I said, I really can't tell. And especially because, you know, one of the tells with samples rather than real people is the rhythm is so incredibly regular, and there's not a lot of rubato and time for the musicians to breathe. So how did you tweak your sample library to make it sound more real?
I can actually turn this into a tip that I can offer other composers. And my methodology, when time permits, is to, as I said, try to do it first on paper. So you end up writing lines instead of big block chords, which is what you end up doing if you're just improvising. And then, if time permits, try to record every single line that you've written in real time as a performance. So that if I have a string chord, I will play in the first violins, and then I will play in the second violins, and then I will play in the violas, et cetera. And there'll be all these imprecisions that I'd like to think are musically informed rather than just the result of adding a little bit of random timing offset. I find that adds a kind of humanity to a score that was digitally produced.
Thank you. That's fascinating, because then it would sound more like individual players, like an orchestra would be. You know, starting a brand new soundtrack for anything must be, you know, kind of an intimidating prospect. And so I'm curious about how you get started and if there's anything you've learned over the years, either the easy way or the hard way, that makes getting started a little bit easier.
I try to pick a cue that is of medium complexity and use that to just jump in and establish a back and forth tradition with the clients. And it's as much as learning the client's personal preferences and languages as it is setting up your own thematic material. If I sequester myself in a corner and come up with all these themes and then derive sub-themes from them and make my musical universe, and then dump it on the client and have them say, oh, you know, I don't really like violins, then I haven't worked very efficiently. So it's good to start to get the chain of communication going early in the process to suss out what the client wants and where I have creative freedom and where I have constraints.
Yeah, and I would imagine once you get those limits down, then that does kind of free you up to just be thinking more about what the music's going to sound like.
Exactly right. And if you, there's this famous quote or saying by Stravinsky that I don't have the memory to recite for you verbatim, but the essence was that he loved to avoid the abyss of freedom by bringing in as many constraints as he could to a commission. So he would want to know how long a piece was and what instrumentation he was going to use. And I would add that if you're a modern composer working for someone else, knowing what the client's preferences are or what their constraints are part of the constraints that you're working with, as much as whether you're doing an orchestral or contemporary score, et cetera. So if I could figure out what my client loves and hates early on, I've limited the undesirable aspects of having too many choices. You know, I've trimmed the search tree a little bit, and then I can be more creatively free within the constraints that I have.
Well, and that would definitely save a lot of time, because then you're not going off in the wrong direction and spending a lot of time writing music that you know ultimately they're not going to approve. It sounds like, from a lot of the composers that I've talked with, that communication with the team and the composer is like the number one thing that keeps a project on track.
One thing I really appreciated in working with John Paolo is that he liked voice feedback and voice communication rather than email. And what's wonderful about this is that when you're talking to somebody about music, the emotional cues in your voice and your word choice and just the way you're addressing the person convey a lot of information that's very useful. So if somebody sends you an email saying that they want something different, you don't really know if they mean, this is so out of whack with what I wanted, you should just be embarrassed to have sent me this. Or if they mean, oh, you know, you're in the right ballpark, but I would just like to change these few details here. Whereas if you're talking over Skype, you can hone in on that very quickly. And even when I wasn't talking in real time with John Paolo, he would record video feedback and send that to me over Skype. And that was useful because I would have all those emotional cues and I could rewind. So if I felt like I didn't catch something he said, I could refer to it again.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Were there any cues that you sent him that didn't hit the mark right off the bat, that required a little bit of massaging or a complete rethink?
There were a couple of cases where instrumentation needed to be changed just because it felt occasionally too modern or too contemporary and didn't have the historical feeling that John Paolo wanted. The cue we worked on the most was the first. And I think this is typical when you're working with a new client. You're figuring out what their artistic universe is. And that was what's called the Asian theme, though I really think of it as the Chinese theme. And we spent a lot of time figuring out the balance between having a sense of melody and having that melody not be too in your face. Thank you. And the investment we spent working on that cue and sending it through different iterations really paid off later because I felt like I knew what I needed to do in subsequent cues.
And the other layer of things that you have to think about is working with the overall audio design too. And while I was looking at the game, I realized that not only does your music have to have this emotional, you know, support for the game, but it also has to play nicely with the other sounds in the game, like the sheep or the sounds of battle. Was any of that in your control, or was that completely up to the audio team?
I did not have input on sound design. And the way I try to compensate for that is to encourage the developers to share a playable beta or even a video of gameplay as soon as possible. Developers, as you can imagine, want to put their best foot forward, so they like to send you something as close to the final product as possible. I encourage composers to nudge on this issue and say, just send me whatever sluggish beta you've got, even if it's in debug mode and it's working half the speed and the graphics are really primitive, because it'll let me hear what's going on and it'll let me get a feel of the pacing of the game. That said, in game music is non-deterministic. You never know exactly when those sheep are going to bleat. It's not like a film where you can cleverly duck your music around the pacing of dialogue or sound design or wait for the airplane engines to start and stop. You just have to draw from your intuitions as a gamer and your memories as a game player to know when sound design is going to be most prominent and to try to deal with it that way as best you can.
Yeah, and a lot of times what composers will do, they'll work with the audio team and tune everything so that if the in-game sounds that you hear over the music are going to kind of be more in the foreground, they're almost in the same scale or the same sort of audio range as the music, which is ultimately good thing to do, because then nothing jumps out as being, hey, wait a minute, that shouldn't be there. That really got my attention in a bad way.
Where I usually find this comes into play is with musical sound design, by which I mean a sound designer may have some kind of interface acknowledgement sound effect that has a musical quality to it. It might be a chord or a note, and that may rub against the key of the music that's ongoing in the game. So I do try to keep an ear out for conflicts like those. That having been said, I was pretty gently treated insofar as sound design goes in this game, because there's a medieval setting. There's no gunfire. There are no airplane engines. Airplane engines, by the way, are my historical nemesis. There's no spaceships crashing in asteroids. So the loudest the sound design gets is actually pretty gentle, and it leaves a lot of breathing room for the music.
And that is such a wonderful cue. It's the French cue from Field to Town, and it's the first level in the game if you play as the French Empire. And it's such an easy way to start the game, too, because it has a really familiar quality to it. Like a lot of RTSs, you're in medieval France. So it's really a wonderful cue.
Early in gameplay is when you have your best opportunity to be optimistic musically and most melodic, because typically in the early phases of an RTS, you're constructing things, you're laying down the infrastructure for your civilization, you're taking a little bit of national pride as you've laid out all your walls and your houses, and it's before everything has been demolished by the rampaging enemy. So that's where I tried to be most melodic and to have the most fun when it felt appropriate for a given culture.
You know, I'm curious about how you got into writing music for media in the first place. You went through a film scoring program at USC, and it's a tough program to get into, so Congratulations on getting through the program. But what was it that kind of sparked you to want to do that?
My path is long and convoluted, and it's probably hard to replicate exactly what I did, just as every composer's autobiography has its own nuances. I was initially interested only in film music or film and TV music, and partially that was a function of the state of the art at that time. You know, when I was starting out, game music had not really reached the level of production quality that was very satisfying to work with. There were certainly beloved old 8-bit game scores that I appreciated, and certainly when I grew up, I played a lot of musically primitive games, and I mean that in terms of production quality, not artistic quality. But it wasn't a direction I was that interested in going. So I was focused on film music for a while, but as fate would have it, I got a call from a fledgling game startup in Boston that was connected to a project that I'd worked for in college. And they were starting from scratch, and they wanted an in-house music guy who understood both medium music as well as some of the technology that would be involved for implementing music in games. And I'd had some programming background, and I'd spent some time thinking about how music could be deployed interactively or dynamically. And this is the 90s, so those technologies were really in their, if not infancy, they were in their early adolescence. So I was brought aboard as the composer and audio developer, what we would call an audio lead today. So got drawn into game music that way. And having spent a couple of years at that company, I segued into doing more conventional music as a freelancer for a number of outside clients. And I found that I really enjoyed doing game music. It touched on passions of my youth, and I really liked the problem-solving aspect of interactive music and dynamic music, and the artistic freedom you get when you're writing music for a number of different scenarios, of which any one of them could happen, but you're not quite sure which. Whereas in film, you know, you're really tightly constrained to a very particular story.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I don't want to say I drifted from one realm to another, but I expanded my palette from being just interested in film music to focusing on both film music and game music, which I see as overlapping but distinct disciplines.
Yeah, they are. And I think, but there's a lot of cross-pollination, because techniques that would work for film scoring, you know, all of a sudden you've got the background to be able to write music for a cutscene. Or if you need to make interactive music for a film, you can do that because you've done it for a game. And your career now is at a point where you've got a lot of projects. So your resume is very impressive now. If you had some advice to offer a composer who's, you know, maybe starting out or midpoint and wants to kick their career up into a higher gear, you know, what are some of the things you would suggest?
Well, there's a lot of general good advice that I can echo about the importance of networking and inspiring confidence in the people who could hire you and putting up your website, and a lot of pedestrian advice, which I think is available everywhere. What I would tell new composers today, be capable of writing music in a large number of styles, but once you've developed that capability, focus on the kind of music that is most meaningful to you artistically, because you'll do best when writing from the heart. And I think that people will take notice of you when you're writing that way, when you're composing in a genre that you really love. And you'll get into a nice feedback loop where you'll be asked to do the style of music that you love best and therefore that you do best. And that will build your resume so that you can continue working in that genre. And once you've established yourself in a particular genre and you have a kind of home base, I know this is not satisfying because I'm speaking very generally, but
yeah.
I'm trying not to be too particular. But let's say you do a lot of fantasy scoring and you really love doing that, and that's what you're known for and you get called upon to do. You'll have a pretty thick resume of music in that style. And then once you've established that home base, you can then start branching out into other realms that might also be of interest to you. But I think focusing on the thing you love is a really good way to differentiate yourself in an enormous sea of composers.
Yeah, definitely, because that way you can add your own passion to it, which you can't replicate. I mean, you can kind of, I suppose, fake it at some point, but if you're writing something in a style that you really love, you know, it just has that really genuine sound. What are your plans to release a soundtrack for Empires Apart?
Right now, the soundtrack is available as a kind of bonus for people who buy the game. I don't remember if it's still a freebie or you have to pay a few dollars, but that's the official way to get the soundtrack right now. We are working out the paperwork to release it more generally apart from the game. I think the developers and publisher just wanted an initial period where the music was a little incentive to buy the game itself. But the soundtrack on its own should be available in the near future.
Oh, that's fantastic. And are you working on anything right now that you can talk about?
Yes, and not that I can talk about it.
Oh.
It's terrible if you like to brag because you just want to say, oh, I'm doing this for XYZ, but you've just signed all this paperwork where you have to donate your internal organs
yep.
if you so much as breathe a word about it. So I'll be really happy to brag about everything as soon as I'm allowed to.
Yeah, no, that's fine. And I kind of figured that would be the answer because more often than not, when I ask somebody, that's exactly what I hear. And I understand, you know, studios want to keep things secret for as long as they can. So, but now I'm curious about what it is that you are working on. So hopefully we'll get to hear it soon. And how can people track you down on social media or on the internet?
My home base online is mikemusic.com, and that's just what it sounds like, Mike and then music as one word and .com on the end. I am MadBardMike on Twitter, and you can also find me on Facebook. I don't think there's a quick mnemonic for that, but I think if you just search for Michael Gordon Shapiro, you'll find my artist page there.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, it has really, really been fun talking with you, and good luck with your future projects, and I hope that soundtrack release comes out really soon.
It's been a pleasure joining you today. Thanks for taking the time to talk, and thanks for all the good wishes. Mm-hmm.